up, and a younger generation of feminists found that. I think feminist filmmakers, and kind of latched onto it because they were, in fact, being told those things in film school: don't have more than two women characters, or Hollywood won't buy your movie. So they took it and started using it as a gauge for movies, and it got kind of popularized, and is still attached to my name, which I feel a little sheepish about, but it's kind of
because
cool.
It was your friend's idea.
It was my friend's idea. Yeah. Actually, I think my friend got it from Virginia Woolf. I think it was sort of a key part of A Room of One's Own. But it's a nice boiled-down version of it.
Right before we conclude, I'd just like to ask you, the title of your next work is Secret to Superhuman Strength. Would you like to say anything about it?
Oh. Yeah, it's not a very political book, not so far. It's a book about exercise. It's a memoir comic about my relationship to exercise. I haven't quite figured it out yet. That's all I'll say.
Do you exercise?
I do.
Ambivalence.
No, that's one thing I'm not ambivalent at all about. It's how I stay sane.
Alison Bechdel, author of the graphic memoir Fun Home, along with the history-making Tony Award-winning duo Lisa Krohn and Janine Tesori, who adapted Fun Home into a Broadway musical. If you want a copy of today's show, visit our website at democracynow.org. If you use an iPhone, check out our app at democracynow.org/iOS. We also have a job opening for a social media editor. Check democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Noreen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. I have a public service announcement. The Shell Oil icebreaking ship, the Fenneca, is now in motion. We need as many activists as possible to swarm the St. John's Bridge to protect our activists who are still hanging from that bridge. Yes, this is a call to action right now, folks. My understanding is the police have already closed the bridge, so gather at whichever end of the bridge you can get to help protect our activists and stop that ship. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guests are local organizers with the Black Lives Matter movement, and we'll talk about what we hope to accomplish right here in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Aurora Colony Vineyards 2015 Jazz Festival, August 9th, with doors opening at 2 p.m. and performances from 3 to 9 p.m. The Aurora Colony Vineyards is located at 21338 Oak Lane Northeast in Aurora, Oregon. Performers include Tony Lincoln, the Ron Steen Band, Picante Latin Jazz, Tom Grant, and many more. Again, that's the Aurora Colony Vineyards Jazz Festival, August 9th, from 2 to 9 p.m. More information about directions and ticket prices can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Ooh, what a little moonlight can do.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 17th annual Pickathon, July 31st through August 2nd. Pickathon is 3 days and 7 stages of performances by a variety of bands such as Tune Yards, Shabazz Palaces, Ty Segall, Leon Bridges, Freakwater, and dozens more. Pickathon takes place at Pendarvis Farm in Happy Valley and features weekend or single-day tickets, as well as wooded camping, food trucks, and local beverages. A full list of artists, stage schedule, ticket prices, and transportation options can be found at kboo.fm/pickathon2015.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor, along with North Portland Community Building Group, Proper, of the We Can Do It Together community concert. Local politicians, community activists, faith groups, and artists will join in a day of unity, song, and prayer in Kenton Park on Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. This concert will feature a variety of local artists that will rally for unity in this time of unrest. Again, that's the We Can Do It Together community concert, Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Kenton Park at North Kilpatrick and Delaware in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Before I get into my program this morning, I wanna say bad man. Daryl Turner, as you may know, is the president of the Portland Police Association. And for about the last 3 months, he's been telling me, oh yeah, I will come on Voices from the Edge. I'll talk to anybody. And so I had him pick a date. I confirmed it with him, and miraculously, he just seemed to not be available to come and answer questions about why Portland Police Association is so disconnected from the people they supposedly protect and serve. And so I just want to say, Mr. Daryl Turner, enjoy your time away today. I had no expectation that you would actually be a man of your word, and since you chose the date, chose the time, and chose not to participate, I won't be inviting you back. Thank you very much. Okay, so had to get that out of my system, you know, so I could just like shake it off. But I have an absolutely fabulous program for you today. As you know, Black Lives Matters had its first national convening last week in Cleveland, Ohio. I have here in the studio with me Adrian and Simone, both organizers with Black Lives Matters here in Portland. Welcome you both to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, now you have to talk up because, you know, this is radio, so they're going to have to hear your voice, right? They can't see how gorgeous you are, so you got to talk. Thank you both for being here. I know it's early in the morning. I am so excited to have this conversation today because I think there's so much misinformation about Black Lives Matters just in general, mm-hmm. right? And so let's start with, what is Black Lives Matters?
Black Lives Matter Portland is the nationally recognized chapter of the Black Lives Matter movement that's happening nationwide. Black Lives Matter is known for the hashtag, but it's also an organization that was started by Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi, and Alicia Garza.
Young African-American women.
Yes. Yeah, two Black queer women, one African immigrant. So tons of intersections within this organization. And it's really intentional about being a place where all Black lives matter, including queer Black lives, trans mm-hmm. Black lives, Black women. Like, it's an extremely intersectional and intentionally intersectional movement.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, that was a very clear definition.
Nice,
and
nice.
Very nicely done. Yes, I agree. And so You went to Cleveland.
We did.
Tell me what that was like. Tell me what it was like. What? How many people showed up?
Oh my gosh!
It's like 1,500.
It was like 1,500, and it was an all Black space. And I personally have never been in an intentionally all Black space that was that large. Like,
right?
I don't even have the words to describe it. It was overwhelming. It was beautiful.
Beautifully overwhelming, huh?
Yes, it was.
I like that.
We just kept looking around like, y'all are so beautiful. Look at everyone.
And was there this sense of unity, right? Because we hear that, know, there's always truth battles and blah, blah, blah. So did you feel like you were in the room with your sisters and your brothers? And
honestly, yeah. Like, we could not know people on a first name basis because there was 1,500 people.
Right.
But you smiled at each other passing on the street. Like, you would strike up a conversation with like a person standing next to you. Like, everybody had this like loving, healing energy that was really beautiful.
Very,
well, not everyone, but most people. But
people
well, we can't ask everybody.
Care of each other for sure.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Very cool. And so this was the first time since the creation, since this movement started, mm-hmm. that people from all over the country had an opportunity to come together. So what was the agenda for this convening?
It really started with like a healing-centered focus,
yes.
And also like a focus on the families of folks that were directly affected, families of victims of police murder, the reason that we're here.
And so talk again about, it started with healing. Mm-hmm. Why is healing so important and such a great place to start?
Because we are wounded people. because the systems of oppression that are against us right now have been against us for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to do this work from a broken space, right? You just would end up making so many things worse. Mm-hmm. So coming in for an embrace and a healing and an I love you and remember why you do this work was so affirming. It was the best way to start the convening, because there were family members, like Emmett Till's family was there. Wow. And Mike Brown's father was there. And wow. Oscar Grant's parents were there. And Tamir Rice's mother was there. Mm-hmm. So like we were able to share space and hear from the people the loved ones of the people like whose names we carry every day.
Right.
And I think it's so easy for these people to become a hashtag and for us to forget that they're folks who love them and who know them and who grieve this loss and deal with this loss every day.
Mm-hmm. And because many people think that once it's off the front page of the newspaper, that somehow it's just not important anymore, right?
Right.
That, you know, we've moved on to something else.
Right.
I so agree with the healing spot. And please, I want to also put this out there. You said this was an all-Black space, mm-hmm. Intentionally
yes.
Created to start with the healing process. So tell me, I'm sure you've had pushback from other people who said, well, how come I can't come? I've been helping you guys. You know, I'm an ally,
actually,
right?
Not from the folks that we organize with. Yeah. Perhaps we have them really well trained.
Allies are on fleek. Allies on fleek, for sure.
They were just like, we understand, have fun, do you need money? Like,
it's really cool. Wonderful. Hi, welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jamondria Harris.
Welcome to the program. As you can see, we just jumped right that smack into it. And for my listening audience, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so this was a three-day event. It was over the weekend.
Yes.
And so you started with the healing. Mm-hmm. You had an opportunity to meet people who have had just the most horrendous experiences. In fact, Cleveland was where kid, right, who was in the park across the street from his house playing with a toy gun, which is what kids do in parks and all across the country, right? So that was a interesting location to even have that convening.
Yeah, and even the Cleveland State University was an interesting location as well, because although the space itself was very Black, the actual campus was not very friendly to Black folks.
Really?
There was a very visible police presence that, like, there are cops, like, walking through the student
their
center constantly.
Is
there
armed.
Was, like, cop cars, like, rolling past constantly.
Yeah.
It was an interesting, intense police presence at the Cleveland State University. And also, like, the administration itself was not very supportive of the conference, it didn't feel like.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Let's see, what else should we know? So what came out of the convening? What did you bring back here that you're just ready to put in action?
So much things. as a family member that has lost a loved one to police murder, centering families is really important. So for us here at Black Lives Matter PDX, there are two campaigns that we are taking up, two names that we have decided to uphold at the forefront of what we do, and reaching out to the those surviving family members and giving them what they need, even outside of the space that we're fighting for justice for them, making mm-hmm. sure that they're taken care of at home, making sure that they're connected with other parents all over the nation who understand what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely took that back with me. That spoke volumes to me.
Excellent. We have a caller on the line. I'm going to go to the phone line. If you'd like to join the conversation, We are talking with Black Lives Matters PDX, just back from a national convening that I understand was inspirational, overwhelming, exciting, and lots of to-do items on the list now that they're back in Portland. We're going to go to the phone line. Hello, James. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, so I had a question. How does somebody who's interested in being a part of Black Lives Matter, how do they get involved?
Good question. Boy, you jumped the gun on that because that was actually on my list, but I guess we should go there right now. Thank you for the...
Sorry, doing it all out of order.
It's okay. It's okay. We have people that are just ready to start acting, and I like that, so I don't want to discourage that. So we will have that conversation now. Thanks for the call.
Our organization is an intentionally all-Black space. Mm-hmm. It's really important to organize within our community led by folks directly affected. For white folks and allies, there are groups organizing right now. One I can really suggest is the Maryland Buck Collective, which is a group of white folks organizing for racial justice and against white supremacy. Another really good one is Surge, which is standing up for racial justice.
Yeah, I really like them.
If you've seen like those Black Lives Matter like, lawn signs around town, yes. That's Surge. That's one of their first projects. And so that would be a recommendation for allies that are wanting to get involved. And if you're a Black person that wants to get involved, we have open meetings. In other words, Tuesdays at 7:30.
Excellent, excellent. So that was really, that's really clear. And I agree with you. And so talk a little bit about Standing Up for Racial Justice is a group that I use a lot in trainings. And I say, you know, it was created by white people for white people to have detailed conversations around race, okay, right? And white supremacy and what their role is in actually creating a more just society. What I love about Surge's material is they say if you only have a half hour for racial justice, you can do this, right? If you only have an hour, you can do this. And so it doesn't overwhelm white people,
yeah,
with having to deal with race, right? Because I think it becomes challenging when white people expect Black people to educate them on race.
Right.
And so what's the biggest challenge you see as you start inputting your work plan to continue the mission of Black Lives Matters? Now, you talked about two projects. You didn't name the names. Do you want to do that?
Oh, yes. So we like to lift up the name Kendra James, Ashe, and Keaton Otis. Ashe, Kendra James was killed on May 5th, 2005, on the Skidmore overpass. And was a single mom who, you know, left behind a child, which I don't think is something that people consider. Mm-hmm. And Keaton Otis was murdered on 7th and Halsey on May 12th, 2010. So those, and I mean, I'm sure folks who live in Portland have been privy to the video that was taken of Keaton's execution. So
those two projects are, I mean, those two incidents, mm-hmm, really kind of shaped folks in Portland, especially I think Kendra James, because mm-hmm, until Kendra James was killed, we didn't think it was possible for a woman to be killed by, yeah, the police, mm-hmm, right? Especially an unarmed woman. And so when you say you're taking these on, what's your goal? You're creating visibility, you're...
We want to saturate the cities with their names. The ultimate goal is to get new investigations into both of their cases by the Oregon State Attorney. We want those cases reopened. We think there is a serious miscarriage of justice, and we want new investigations for both victims.
Wonderful. Well, I can't argue with that. Okay, back to the phone line. Hello, Brian. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. How are you today?
Wonderful. How about yourself?
Good. Nice to hear all these voices. So I would like to make a comment about the subject of allies. And, you know, part of being a good ally is knowing when to step back. And I think this meeting was great. You know, it was an all-Black meeting. And I think it was great that, you know, I mean, you guys are acknowledging you know, your stance here. And I think, you know, as far as I'm concerned, being an ally is not going to protests as much as taking the protests into everyday life.
Right.
And
yes.
I'd like to make one comment that there was a coffee shop a few years ago who refused to serve a policeman. And you know what? That in itself, you know, socially isolating the problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, as mean as that sounds,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, Joanne, I've expressed this before. If all these really good cops would get on all these few bad cops, we wouldn't have any bad cops anymore, you know. And the thing is like, you know, socially isolating people, saying, I don't approve of what you're doing, you're part of the problem, you're not standing up in your system for this. You know, as far as being an ally goes, that's I think, if people want to be allies, you know, it's not necessary that they just go to a protest, or if they're not invited to a protest, they don't carry it into everyday life. And I believe the coffee shop that did it was a predominantly white coffee shop in the southeast section. I think it was Muddy Waters or something. But anyway, that was my thought on that, and it's just my experience.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you sharing that. And okay. I can't remember the name of the coffee shop, but that wasn't it.
Okay.
But somebody will.
There was a coffee shop.
There was.
It was sort of a collective.
And it is a collective, and it still exists. I want to say
it. Does. Okay.
Yeah, I want to say it was like
it
the
was.
Red,
it was the Red and Black Cafe.
I was just going to say
it
that.
Has. It's a different thing now, though.
Social.
But you know, I thought that was just a great. You know, and everybody was like aghast about it. But now, you know what? You know, just a few years later, after all of these killings and all this violence, it makes a lot of sense just to say, look, when y'all get yourself together, we'll start treating you like human beings. But for now, you're not going to sit at our table in civil society. Have a nice day.
You do the same.
You guys take care.
Thank you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You for your call.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate that. And so he raised a couple of interesting questions. I think that we are at a moment in this generation where white comfortable America can no longer ignore the brutality that black people and other communities are experiencing at the hands of the police.
Mm-hmm.
I'm older than all of you combined, probably. But that's another show.
Not only is that impossible.
Yeah. But having said that, this is not a new fight in the black community. In fact, last summer when we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington,
mm-hmm.
It was acknowledged that the top issues that the March on Washington focused on was police brutality, education, housing, economic opportunity. And so you fast forward 50 years, right? And it is the exact same issues mm-hmm. that are the top issues in the black community.
Yes, ma'am.
So how do you how do you keep this energy just knowing that, you know, you are now at the cusp of something I've experienced my entire adult life, right? And my parents experienced their entire adult life. But again, once every generation, like in the 60s with the Civil Rights Movement and now with the Black Lives Matter movement, white middle class America can't be comfortable anymore, right? And so there's an awakening. But what do we do with that awakening so that people don't end up back just sitting in front of Portlandia, right? Thinking that's the real world. They're all speechless.
Oh.
This is radio.
It's early. It's a little early for me to be thinking about. But I think about it all the time. I don't. I kind of sometimes take argument with the linear construction of struggle, where it's like there's kind of like these waves and these peaks, and then mm-hmm. there's these valleys of non-action. I think it's kind of like a tree with roots. There's always action underground. When things break up to the surface, it's meaning that the earth is ready, the time is right. I don't necessarily think that there are problems in sustainability per se, a revolution, a revolt. I think that there are problems in the lengths to which people are willing to go to actually build a new world, because that has been the problem when there's been every awakening, is that people don't want to wake all the way up. They don't want to let go of all the things. And I think maybe the difference at this point is that there's all these different catastrophes coming in on us, because it's, you know, the destruction, the fall of capitalism, which is inherently anti-Black at its root. And climate change is making like a particular urgency to this moment, where it's like, not only do Black people need to engage with one another to try and destroy the state structure, it's like Black people need to engage with one another so that we can survive the coming collapse, that there isn't many solutions left inside of this system for us that are actually viable for Black people as a people. There is a lot of mythology around like Black excellence and this talented 10th, and that like a few striving or a few leaders will lead us, or like that we can look at the success of particular Black individuals and somehow this does better for everyone, when it is, you know, historically proven that this is not necessarily the case at all. It's like another narrative that capitalism has in place to keep the majority of Black people enslaved. So if anything has to move forward, it's like this realization that you as an individual are not going to be able to uplift Black people. Your individual actions do not uplift Black people per se. It's that what you can actually do to reach all Black people, what you can actually do to make it more viable for all Black people to be living a sustainable life, you know, in light of climate change, in light of the collapse of capitalism, etc.
That was a mouthful. we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Francis. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for all that you guys do. I am a mom, and I think that's where I'm coming from most of the time when I advocate for justice. My children are African American, and my husband, who has spent too many years in prison, an African American, and I think that one thing that came out of this most recent murder, the one in Cincinnati, was the police reports and the fact that two other officers
backed up the story.
Corroborated the story that was a total lie.
Yeah.
And I think that when we speak of these people being bad apples, as someone just said on your show, the officers who allow these bad apples to continue are not good officers.
Exactly.
So,
right.
I wish the man that was supposed to come visit with you today had some, because I would ask him that question.
He doesn't have any political courage, you know, because otherwise he'd be able to come on here and defend his actions and defend his union.
Correct.
But
right, and that's what, when my son, who was a very good friend of Keaton's, we were speaking just yesterday about how this incident and how similar it was to the narrative that was given about Keaton. And when the young woman was stopped in
Texas, allegedly killed
herself.
Right. Right, with a plastic garbage bag.
Similar scenario.
Right.
They came up on the back of behind him. And then when he didn't signal to get over out of their way, then he was stopped because he didn't signal. The same thing happened with Ms. Bland.
Right.
I am extremely tired of it, but I would like to recognize that there are a lot of lives in the prisons right now who may be there for similar scenarios where whatever the police said was the truth. And well, they should not even be in those penitentiaries.
No question about that.
We should not forget them at all.
Thank you.
They
really
need our support more than anybody else right now, probably, because a lot of them are so alone.
Thank you for your call.
So anyway,
appreciate
you all
it. Okay, have Bye-bye. A good day. You know, she raises a really good point. I use a Thai guru as an example constantly of a young man who could right now be sitting in Oregon State Penitentiary because of the police narrative of him attempting to murder this police woman. And, you know, and those two officers are still on Portland. They're still on the payroll. They're still working patrol. Nothing has changed in their lives. And when you ask the city of Portland, so when the judge said the scenario that the police officers testified to could not have happened based on the video that was shot by the community.
Yeah, right.
Why are they still wearing Portland police officer uniforms? I don't get that. And when we talk about how police support the lie that the officer who actually commits the crime, this is a perfect example, right? So this is the exact same situation. And when we asked the police commissioner, the mayor, Charlie Hales, well, what's going on with these two officers? His response is, it's still under investigation.
Damn.
When you asked our incompetent independent police review oversight committee, well, I thought you were investigating, what's going on? They say they cannot locate Ty Grew's family in order to complete their investigation. Now, you would think, since he just stood trial for attempted murder of a police officer, it would be really easy to track down his family. They certainly know where he lives in North Portland. And so it's an example of what the so-called systems of accountability are supposed to do and how they really act in real life.
Well, yeah, and you also have to, it's really important to make that connection. Like, every single time that we see a video, it's always proving that the cops are lying.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Every single time, every single time. And other cops are backing them up. In the Walter Scott case, we see a black police officer covering for the other cop as he, like, sees he's spinning a narrative about what happened. Like, every single time a video exists, it proves the cops are lying. What does that say about the state of policing in this country?
Yes.
Well, and I would also like then to bring in the case of Kendra James's murder with this, because the officer who was responsible for murdering Kendra James not only left the scene of a crime, he was also able to sit down and have dinner with other officers who had been involved, and then go speak to a union rep, and then go speak to lawyers before he ever had to say what happened. And even when the evidence was presented, then we have two separate testimonies and none of the stories add up. That officer would also then go on to be responsible for the murder of another black person in Portland just 2 years later. So, I mean,
and so the systems that are supposed to make sure that if something happens,
Scott
and
McAllister,
goes wrong,
we know who you
Scott
are.
Scott McAllister, yeah, we do.
We know who
we
you are.
We do know that name. When, you know, so we have supposedly systems of check and balances, right? What we know is that with when somebody is killed by the police, the only redress is if they are able to have a day in court, right? Where they, where we, the taxpayers, then provide financial compensation for that family's loss. It never makes them whole again. But it's what we, the taxpayers, provide, right? But if you go back to the police, nothing changes in their budget, nothing changes in the training, nothing changes in how they interact with the community. And so we've got about a half hour left, and you guys have depressed the heck out of me. And so it is my goal for us to actually talk about solutions, right? Because I've been working at this police accountability for about 30 years in this community, right? And I want to know, I know you guys have new ideas, creative ideas about how we fix what's broken in this society. And so that's where I want to go. But I also will give you some chance to think about it, because we do have a caller on the line. Hello, Michael. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, Joanne. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. A little depressed about what goes on. But you know something? I've been, like, studying this police thing, and I see two things happening here. I see, first of all, the structural racism, which is systematic, which has been killing black people for, what, 500 years, as long as we've been in America. And tied to the structural racism, when you talk about Charlie Hales and them guys, you have to also talk about corruption. That's corruption. Whenever a police do something and there's a cover-up, what you have there also is corruption. But also what I see is I see a movement within the police system. Now, this movement that I see, which is totally a little different from the structural, because police now is just killing black people left and right on traffic stops, and they're doing it with impunity. That's a movement. And the movement reminds me of the same kind of movement I saw in Nazi Germany when Hitler came to power, and they started a movement, and they started eradicating Jews. So this is a movement. And what is sad about why we can't change things, Diane, which is sad, is that when white people, the right white people, are not involved. If you look at them ships that come trying to sail out of Swan, that island down there.
Swan Island?
Yeah. You see white people go and they get up on the bridge and they camp out and they turn their ships around. But they don't do that kind of stuff, man, when black
that's
people...
Real. That's real. So that's so true. That's so true.
All the snaps. All of the snaps. So real.
So you have a lot of agreement in this studio, Mike.
Hanging off the bridges for Black Lives.
24 hours. They will go out there for 24
they
hours.
They wouldn't even let us probably hang off a bridge for 24 hours.
I know. They would lose
they
Black Lives.
Walk across the bridge, homie.
Okay, so, yes.
Joanne,
yes.
You can laugh, but I'm telling you, it's not funny.
No, they're not laughing.
They are
laughing in support of your statement because they understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
So finish up, Mike.
One last thing. This is sad commentary, but PETA, the Organization for Animals, animals have gained more social acceptance in this community, in this society. They have advanced more socially in this society than black people. Now, that's a sad commentary.
That is a sad commentary, and I don't disagree with you, Michael. Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Always provocative caller. He doesn't call me often, but what he does, he always has people in an uproar.
That statement is so real, though. From the media coverage of white people protesting and what is said when white people riot, like compared to what is said when we do anything. If we had attempted to shut down a bridge like that, we would have been pepper sprayed and in handcuffs before the last person dangled their legs over the side, if they even let us hit the bridge, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's what I was about to say. I'm gonna cut the rope.
Like that's so real. I mean, and just after we left Cleveland, actually, we were driving through Ohio and Indiana on our way back to catch our flight in Chicago, and there was a 14-year-old who was arrested by the Cleveland PD, and thank God. The movement for Black Lives convening was there because folks took the street and, you know, surrounded these cops and filmed them and let them know that they were 100% out of line and were pepper sprayed for doing so.
Right.
Like that's a first response to us. There's this myth, right, that the police come and when they shut us down, they like de-escalate or they talk to us.
Right.
No, they come. They stand for about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. They see what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. They pull out some pepper spray. They pepper spray us, and all hell breaks loose.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every single time.
So they are the agitators and the aggressors when they show
up.
Absolutely.
And,
always.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I was just reading recently that the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division had been monitoring Black Lives Matters since Ferguson, right?
Mm-hmm.
It took me back to the 60s, right? Mm-hmm. Because you may remember that Contel Pro came, which was all about shutting down the Black Panther movement. Because what were they about? Feeding black people, providing health care for black people, protecting black people from police brutality.
And meanwhile, you have people like Dylann Roof shooting up churches. You have white supremacist terrorists committing actual violence on a scale we have not seen. They are organizing, and where's the surveillance on them? We're asking for liberation. Right. We get cop surveillance. They're trying to kill us, and they're being left alone.
Yes. And I want to, if I can, for 2 seconds, then take a minute to plug an activist organizer and a friend that we just met, Jasmine Richards from Black Lives Matter Pasadena, who was just jacketed as a terrorist maybe 4 or 5 months ago. Yes, and is doing incredible work in Pasadena.
What do you mean when you say jacketed as a terrorist?
They brought her up on terrorist charges.
The local police?
Yes, for, I believe it was threatening violence against the police, right? So this is a person who does a lot of amazing work and comes from like a horribly broken community and has an amazing story. And instead of this person being revered for the work they're doing, this person is then labeled as a terrorist and is watched and harassed by cops. So there is a CrowdRise, crowdrise.org/Jasmine Richards. Look it up and help out Black Lives Matter Pasadena.
All right. Thank you for giving us that information. You want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I am in the studio with Adrienne, Simone,
And Jamondria,
and they are all organizers with Black Lives Matters PDX, and it is such a thrill to have them here in the studio, and we're going to run out of time way before I run out of questions. But if you have questions, feel free to give us a call. We just covered a couple of things, like really, really, really quickly, and I don't want to lose these things. So I think that there's a request that the police actually not provide over policing for Black Lives Matters or other people organizing for their own self-determination in the city of Portland. Have you seen any of you extra police scrutiny because of your work with Black Lives Matters?
Yeah. We know they know who we are.
Uh-huh. And how does that translate when you're out on the street? What does that mean? They follow you? Are they watching you? Are they taking pictures of you?
A lot more visible cop cars or cops just like chilling near my house.
Yeah, my sister and I got home from work the other, like last week, I want to say, and we pulled up and there was an officer sitting directly across the street from our house with their lights off. They were not in our neighborhood for any reason in particular. And about a week before that, they had our neighborhood pretty much swamped by cops who were just cruising by and would actually turn their floodlights on into people's houses. They never came up, told us they were looking for anything.
Right.
It's really intense.
And so, how do you keep yourself safe? Because what I know about community members in Portland who have suffered police violence is that the police intimidate, harass their family members, right? I mean, they kill somebody and then they follow family members and harass and intimidate them. So what are you guys doing to keep yourself safe as you continue to build this movement?
Can't travel alone. Got to make sure that folks know where you are.
Yeah,
gotta, like, if you see a cop, you got to let people know.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to start a cop watch group in the neighborhood in Northeast because we want to, as much as possible, have folks observing the cops in the neighborhood because over and over, and we've seen like the only way to prove that cops are acting
inappropriately
mm-hmm. is to film them, is to observe mm-hmm. them. So we want people doing that as much as possible. So that's like the purpose of that project.
We got callers backed up, so I'm going to try to get through them as quickly as possible so that we can tell people about solutions at the end. Okay. Hello, Richard. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you, Joanne. I'd like to add one more thing to what people should do to keep themselves safe, and that is talk about the people who are responsible for the police presence as we know it today. And I want to say that what I know about the police is that there are not a lot of good cops and a few bad apples. Most cops are bad people. Most cops are marginally intelligent. They're selected. They are deliberately selected for 100 IQs, and that leaves things open to getting a lot of bad people in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people who are doing the selecting need to be talked about on shows like this. And that's the only thing that will start changing this. When the people are identified, who are responsible for the police presence as we know it today are exposed. And that's, is there any comment to that? I'm done.
Thank you for your question. Comment. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to talk about, like, well, you know, police are slave patrols, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was how they were started, right? That was started.
And that's basically what they have. They're maroon patrols. They're basically keeping black bodies from existing in space without the knowledge of the state's boot on us. I would take issue with, like, kind of ableism, with kind of talking about IQ. We give people a lot of excuses for bigotry, for fascist violence, because police violence is fascist violence. We give people a lot of excuses for what are conscious decisions and choices. People join the military, join police forces, engage in state apparatuses that are oppressive because of the allure of the power. Mm-hmm. The mentality that it engenders is what leads to, like, the cops basically acting like a gang, because they are. It's why, you know, they are the gang of the state. They are the boot. This is what they're made to do. People who join it know that they're going to get to exert this kind of power and authority. There's no benign way to engage with this. There's only ways that look less bloody as opposed to being actively bloody. So I feel like the whole narrative around negotiating with the existence of the police, negotiating with them as if they have it in their hearts to do good, or if even the city administrators, the people in power higher up the chain, have the will to do good, that's not necessarily true, because if they had the true will to do good, they would want to abolish, you know, they would want to get rid of the thing, because the thing itself is what's rotten.
Okay, we're going to have to go back to the phone line. We're going to run out of time. Who else do we have on the phone? Jordan, good morning. Jordan, welcome to K-Boo. George, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, so I haven't heard anybody bring it up yet, but the authenticity of the Sandra Bland booking video, I don't know if anybody else is questioning it, but that doesn't even look like Sandra Bland in the video.
Thank you for your call. Have a great day.
Yep.
No one did bring that up, and we don't have time to go there right now. But thank you for that question. Hello, Michael. Welcome to K-Boo.
Thank you, Joanne. Good morning.
Good morning.
More broadly, a flag is cloth subject to interpretation and certain to rot in short order, especially in the swampy South. A stone engraving is a Rosetta Stone waiting for future archaeologists to discover. We lowered the rebel flag, sort of, in the political winds of this moment. In 2,000 years, the sociological historians will see us as a primitive people who worship dragons, burn crosses, go on brave midnight rides, and grow strange fruit. Please use the united mind of this very good city to force the change to the Edmund Peckerwood Bridge over the River Styx. Thank you.
What?
I think that was a poem.
That was a poem.
Okay.
No. That's a serious thing. It just comes out that way.
That's a what?
Oh, no.
We have to change the name of that bridge because the flag is a gesture not even fully accommodated. And that bridge, how come nobody's talking about that? Wasn't it
the bridge in Selma that's named after the KKK?
Right.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you. I appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you for your call. Have a great day. You know, we could spend a lot of time. I don't know how you guys feel about the flag conversation, but the flag has never denied me food, housing, education, brutalized me. The flag is a symbol of oppression, right? The apparatus of oppression still exists. And so we could be diverted by spending a whole lot of energy on a flag, or we could spend our energy actually trying to dismantle the systems mm-hmm. that continue to oppress our society. Saw a great article yesterday that racism costs the state of Oregon $2 billion a year in education.
if the education gap was eliminated, our economic prosperity would be $2 billion additional.
Damn.
And so, and that's just in education. If you think about every system that we have, the cost of racism, so it doesn't just cost Black people or other people of color, it costs everybody. Racism costs everybody. And so it was, I was thrilled to see somebody could put a price tag on what it costs in education. And I'd like to see somebody do that across the board. As you know, now that we've legalized marijuana, I'm still waiting for our governor and our county chair to assess who's incarcerated and what the charges are, mm-hmm. and start the process for commuting sentences mm-hmm. for people who are currently serving time for what will now be a legal opportunity, right? And then how do you make sure that you clean their record so that they don't end up having that stigma attached to their record? You know, but I haven't heard the governor announce any clemency yet, and haven't heard.
Because most of the people in jail for that are Black, and Black folks are not a priority of the state.
And, like, to be clear, I think about the way that we feel about the prison industrial complex is completely made up of Black and brown bodies. It is modern day slavery. We are not down.
Well, I mean, and quite frankly, there is no way to look at who's incarcerated in our society, in the United States of America, and not know it was not an intentional focus, whether we're talking New York with Stop and Frisk, where the requirement was you stop Black and brown people between 12 and 24 on a daily basis, right? We have it here in Portland. We don't call it Stop and Frisk in Portland, but when you see Black and brown boys being stopped and searched and questioned, and girls on a regular basis in our city, you know that it takes place. And so now that we've depressed everybody, let's talk about solutions.
Abolish the police.
Abolish the police. Abolish the prison system.
And so, I mean, I have to ask this, and I'm old. Forgive me for asking this question, but, like, how do we do that?
It looks like disarming them, so taking weapons away from them entirely, demilitarizing them, getting rid of military equipment, the things that they're using on Black folks that are rising up, and then getting that they're changing them so drastically that they don't resemble police anymore. Like, we want to return the responsibility of safety back to the community itself. Let the community decide what safety looks like for them and stop inviting this presence into their communities that, like, murder us, that just, like, bring violence.
And at one point, like, let's be clear, at one point that was something that Black and brown communities had, right? I mean, let's stop accepting this narrative that gangs have always been these awful people who shoot and kill each other and just sell a bunch of drugs. Gangs were started as a way to protect our communities from white folks and from police officers and from the KKK. And slowly but surely, as our communities have become forced further into poverty, and as drugs have been introduced into our communities, and as a way also, though, of being able to support oneself and to be able to support one's family, obviously those systems were corrupted, you know? So, I don't know, food for thought.
I mean, one thing that I have to say about, like, what can be better, what solutions are, I think there are no solutions inside of this system. There are solutions in looking outside of this system and looking past what you have always done in interaction, how you've always looked at your fellow Black people. There's this construction of solidarity that is very confined. And I think what is super radical in Portland would be for, like, Black people to act towards each other in full solidarity with no need for hegemony or power over, like, discarding, you know, old constructions of, like, organizing where there is the leader, there is the name, and then there are the people who follow. What catalyzes community, what builds relationship, is actual solidarity. Like, the people who have resources in the Black community should share them with other Black people. You have an obligation to do so. The you know, the idea that there are like all these black business owners and black people in positions of power, but who are not necessarily known or even like openly invested in this sort of like redistribution of funding and of access. That is something that like inside the black community we can really do, is focus on redistributing our own power and access, so that there literally is more, you know, for us taking up space, pushing the edges of this, you know, society out. If I feel like it's very vital, if we don't discard the narrative that like black people in power are the solution, where it's like, no, the black people who have power distributing that power, the black people who have resources distributing that resources, and us getting out of the idea of, out of all the morality and ethics of capitalism, which were made to abject black bodies. Like, that is like a set of solutions. And there's so many books and there's so much writing about unpacking that, about decolonizing ourselves.
Well, I appreciate I appreciate that insight. I have to say, I remember when I talked abolition as compared to reform. I think that there's no right or wrong way to fix our system. I'm so thrilled that you are out there, that you're pushing the envelope, that you're training young leaders, that you are taking your space. And owning that space. And so, and any opportunities that I have to work in solidarity, you guys already know I'm there. And we don't have to all agree. I think that's the myth. The myth is we don't have to all agree on tactics. We don't have to all agree on the analysis. But what we have to do is work in unity to create a better community for all of us to live in. We have another caller on the line. I'm going to try to squeak in before we run out of time. Hello, Luke. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Yes. Well, as the son of a former president of the NAACP here in Portland, and a black man that has gone through pretty much what everybody is talking about that people go through, as a person that at one time had a no bail status, I mean $1 billion couldn't get me out of jail, although I've never been to prison, okay, as a person who has suffered these indignities, I would just like to get a commitment from all three of you that you will assist me and we will rectify the situation here, because it goes on much deeper than we have for allotted time here on the radio to really get into it. But I've had it with my rights being violated. And if you really want, you know, a cause celeb to stand up and get in their face, and believe me, Joanne has seen it, because I kind of commandeered her march when we were doing it for Aaron Campbell a couple years ago, and I walked and led the parade with the American flag upside down. Okay, and she remembers that too, as the group came back into the park.
Okay,
now, I've been one of those people that put myself out there. Now, can I get a commitment from you all to help me, you know,
so
bring
we
this
don't
all to an end?
So, so,
yo, our commitment as organizers with Black Lives Matter is to all black lives. We
all
are out
black
here
lives.
Rocking for all black lives, period. Period. So just know, Portland, that we're here. We see you. We're here for you. Mm-hmm. Cause celeb or not, like, this is the work and this is our lives. So this is what we do.
And let me just say that I'm not quite sure what the gentleman was asking for. I think it's always interesting when rather than calling to say, so how can I help Black Lives Matters as young emerging leaders, he's calling, wanting us to commit to working on his issue. And so that's not unusual when you are trying to build a movement, that people try to distract you because of whatever their personal issues are. I will say that I'm not asking anyone to make a commitment based on a 30-second radio request. I think if you get involved with Black Lives Matter, like I tell everybody, you know, if you don't know black people, then you need to be involved in organizations that work with black people so that you actually get to build relationships and friendships, and you know people, so you don't have to ask that one black friend what's going on with black people, right? Because that gets annoying.
And we're mostly not inclined to tell you that.
Yeah, right. And then we're not going to tell you anyway, right? Thank you all very, very much. I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate the fabulous work that you're doing. Can't wait to see what's next. You always have an opportunity to come back when you've got something going on. You have an open invitation to come back to Voices from the Edge and let my audience know what's going on.
Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
Thank you. This has been Joanne Hardesty. You have been listening to Voices from the Edge. It is a great, great Thursday. Have a fabulous day. See you next week, same time, same place, same channel. Shame, shame, shame on you, Daryl Turner. Have a great
shame
day, folks.
Shame on you, Daryl Turner.
Shame.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told, so now you see the light.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Just a minute now before 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning. We're about an hour away from Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Then at 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints. That's Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein. Coming up at 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with writer Maggie Nelson about her book, The Argonauts, a memoir offering fresh, fierce, and timely thinking about desire, identity, and the limitations and possibilities of love and language. That's all coming up this morning. Up next, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting an hour-long press watch, the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around, that's coming up right after this on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the MLK Dream Run, the weekend of August 1st and August 2nd. The 5, 10, and 15K runs will take you through the charming and historic retail, residential, and parkscapes of the Seoul District. The run and weekend events include music, food, and entertainment after the run and exist to honor Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, delivered in Washington, D.C., August 1963, during the March for Jobs and Equality. Again, that's the MLK Dream Run, the weekend of August 1st and 2nd at the corner of Northeast Martin Luther King and Alberta in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO.